All right, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to another, not another Bitcoin podcast. I can't believe it. I'm back with the gang, Donnie, Charlie, Bob. Thumbs up. How you guys doing?
Are we going to get fireworks again today?
I don't know.
Can we do it?
Does it work?
Can we do it?
Birthdays.
Let's go.
That's pretty stupid.
Let's go. Let's
you
go.
Say not another Bitcoin podcast, but my thought is like, I just want different Bitcoin podcasts, and this is one of those podcasts that I want. So,
yep. No, that's a good point. If someone brings up anything Austrian, I'm booting you guys immediately. So that's our line. Just like we can't decide what
Australia. Don't know what you're talking about.
We can't decide what an L2 is. Is it unilateral or not? Well, we can define what we talk about this podcast is not. Economics and anything Austrian. Love to the Austrians, though. Nothing against you. Lots to talk about, and I think a lot of it's going to be nerding out about Bitcoin mining and mempool, these kind of topics, because there's a bunch of stuff happening. Bitcoin is breaking. That's what we talk about, really, is all the ways that Bitcoin is in shambles. So, do we want to... I'm open to either one. Do you want your private mempools first or MBV mempool sniping first?
It's all the same.
The kids want to hear about mempool sniping because...
Kids too.
Yeah, if anyone made it this far past our cringe intro, they probably want to be like, why are my cats getting sniped? And they're like, this isn't fair. Somebody should do something. And we're like, I don't know what we could do. I mean...
I think that's dead on.
Short of consensus changes with Bitcoin or moving these transactions off the base layer, this is part of the public nature of transaction relay through Bitcoin. So
we should
really what it's going to do is just cause the market to stop mispricing things.
Yeah, I was going to say at the lowest level, who here has had one of their ordinal purchases sniped? Has anyone been sniped? Donnie? Tell me about it.
Well, I clicked the button and then the thing didn't show up. And the way that I view that is that I didn't want it bad enough. And if you look at it the way that, let's say I happened to click the button first and this was not the case, nobody could outbid me for things. It's not fair that I saw it before someone else who wanted it, right? That's like life just isn't fair. It can't be fair. And what I like about Bitcoin is that it is not the arbiter of justice. It's the facilitator of reality. Whatever is the case is what happens. And if it's the case that someone wants that thing more, it's not a loss for me. I didn't lose my money. The money came back to me. Or it never really left me, I guess you could say. So like, I didn't lose the money. I didn't get the thing, but that's because someone else wanted the thing more and they bought it for more. So like, of course they got it. It feels fair to me. It doesn't feel unfair. It feels correct. Unpopular opinion.
I'm still nerding out over that quote.
That was
Bitcoin is not the arbiter of justice. It is the facilitator of reality. Like, put that up on your wall, Donnie.
It's good. Bumper stickers. I might have to show
I wrote it down.
Dude, there was a bunch. There was a bunch in there. Even, like, MEV is just you didn't want it bad enough. Like, that's a fucking bar, too. Yeah. Like, you pay the fee, you fight for what you want, or you don't deserve it.
You don't get to get in the ring and win a boxing match unless you practice a lot. And if you're the person who knows how to front run people and you have the money to do it and you want the thing, then you get the thing. It's true. And I say that from the loser's seat. And I think it means more because of that.
Donnie, I'm floored. I rarely have nothing to say, but that was you've been just spitting bars out of the gate.
All right, shut it down. Out on a high note.
No, I will say I am... Like, because I do investing, I'm seeing a lot of people pitch, like, mempool algorithms and MEV sniping autobot like bots for Telegram. And, you know, you can be on the go in an iPhone app and you can start, we're going to be the first to be sniping BRC20s, sniping runes and all these things. And I don't trade much. So, like, when I'm looking at it, I'm like, I gotta try and judge how big that market is. But I don't have a good pulse on this. Like, it's obviously happening. Especially for like the
I see it all over the place on Magic Eden right now, all over the place. Even snipers going at multiple people, RBFing their way up to 6,000 sats per VB in some cases. There was one case where it was like a mispriced asset. Someone fat fingered it or something. And it essentially went up into thousands, the thousands of sats per VB range because there was arbitrage opportunity. So, like, I think it's happening OMB, all the
17K.
Time.
It was $17,000 in fees were paid because the asset value was so far below or above where it sold.
Yep. And miners are just, you know, pulling it in.
So this is interesting because this is kind of the effects of you. You know, we at this time last year, everybody was really excited about partially signed Bitcoin transactions as a facilitator of these basically trustless exchanges. And they are beautiful, but because they're public and because of the way these particular PSPTs on Magic Eden at least are constructed, they can be sniped. And I wasn't as smart at the time, but I remember a lot of people were saying, well, there is a shortcoming of this exchange structure, which is this scenario here. Now, I think like this is going to force the market to get better and more sophisticated at pricing assets, because that's really the incentive to snipe these. But I think there's also ways of you can exchange these in different types of scenarios. You can just send these transactions to people and it's not necessarily this like MEV or snipeable transaction, but it just means that I think the marketplaces have a lot of work to do to figure out what is the right type of structure for a marketplace. Is it on chain? Is it on Bitcoin L1? I think a lot of the answer is, yeah, a lot of it's on L1, but they might look different. They might have different coordination mechanisms for buying and selling. So it just shows that we're in a really unsophisticated market environment for these inscription-like assets, because this is still a very, very simple, I would say dumb type of MEV. Like, there's not a lot of sophistication going on at the computation level or the strategy level. It's kind of like, oh, the average human could look and see, oh, that quantum cat's mispriced because it has a cape. I'm going to RBF it to my wallet. And if we've seen the MEV on other chains, these are very, very sophisticated things which require, you know, quantitative analysts and stuff and crypto and crazy, you know, developers and specific coordination with mining pools. So it just goes to show that we're only discovering, you know, the tip of the iceberg of the types of activities that are going to happen.
And Magic Eden solved this with their launch pad by doing an active signature in coordination with a launch pad purchase. So you can't snipe something on a Magic Eden launch because you actually require a Magic Eden signature as part of that PSPT. As far as I know, they don't do that on the marketplace side. And so that's why there are opportunities for mempool sniping. They could do something like that if they wanted to. Is that right, Charlie? Do you know?
I think they could. Cypher told me that there's a way you can add another signature check on there somewhere. Right. I don't know. Again, that's actually beyond me, which is why I'm not the engineer at Magic Eden.
But do we like the way it is? Like, do we like this? Do we like that I like that we get to price things at their real value and then the miners are the ones who get it. Like, that's personally, I like that. Rather than being like, oh, I won a stupid game that's like kind of, it's like bumper bowling. Like, you can't screw it up because you don't really need knowledge. You just need to be the first one to hit the button, you know? And I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's no shoulds around here, but like, if I were Magic Eden, I guess I would just have to listen to the majority of clientele, right?
So I think it might be possible to also strip off the Magic Eden royalty fee from the PSBT.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Is it really?
Why did you go like this? Is this not
public
knowledge? Well,
because I've avoided saying this.
I mean, I've seen other people say it publicly. I think it's only a matter of time until you have a Chrome extension that you just use when you browse Magic Eden and you make a purchase. And it auto RBFs and strips out the fees. And then you have a nice, clean, RBFable transaction. And it probably even watches the mempool for you. You put some threshold for how much you're willing to pay in fees, automatically RBFs above until, you know, you win or lose.
Like, are you releasing that at the end of this podcast? Because it sounds like you're releasing that at
Bob,
the end
you've
of the
arrived
podcast.
At the, I mean, you've arrived at the end game, because, I mean, a lot of what we were talking about a year ago was trustless PSBT marketplaces, where that and where it doesn't. A lot of people were arguing. I say a lot of people. It's like four or five people, Cyphor and Post and some others were saying, well, you know, last spring at least, like, well, you know, layer one marketplaces, they might not be the right business model, at least in the current state, because that margin is going to trend to zero. It's kind of like a Bitcoin mining pool, but the margin trends to zero much faster. And so because it makes a lot more sense for the users themselves to just, once you're able to construct these PSBTs, have some kind of coordination mechanism, like, then you have a market and we price out the middleman. Look at everything on ETH. We speed ran the race to zero, no fees with Blur. I don't know if we're going to do Blur on Bitcoin, because you essentially can't do that. But you're going to see, I feel like you're just going to see competition really, really heat up. And it's not necessarily intra-marketplace competition. It's the public mempool versus the centralized marketplace.
Is this why, because I don't follow the ETH stuff much, but I remember there's a big debate around royalties and how they're going to end up at zero no matter what, because things like, you can't make the code not unstrippable without losing the centralization and, like, custody of that asset. You could put whitelists, but then it's like, do you really own that asset? Well, you own it within these confines, you know? It's like, you buy the NFT with a covenant baked in, and you can spend it at these four locations kind of thing.
Right. The trick with enforceable royalties is you take an open, decentralized, permissionless asset, and you put it in a walled garden, and that's how you enforce royalties. You can't have open, permissionless, and have enforced royalties. You have to give up the openness, the decentralization. Maybe not the decentralization, like, you could probably do it in a decentralized way, but you do give up the, like, do I really own something if it has these enforceable restrictions on it? And maybe you could say, yeah, you own it within the confines of that, you know, prison, that garden, that walled garden, but you do have to give up the open nature of NFTs, of trading.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's two forces at play in my mind. There's one of what Donnie talked about, which is like the kind of like organized chaos of the market, and just let arbitrage and people RBFing like crazy dictate, you know, do you want it bad enough? But then the other one is something I've heard Udi say this in like a tweet somewhere, of like, a lot of MEV is just bad application design, not protocol design per se, but application design. Like, you could mitigate a lot of that through clever designing of how you do your contracts and stuff like that. But if you go too far, you end up in what you just said, Bob, of like, you know, covenant based or like whitelist based. So does that, we think that, with the, can you eliminate most of MEV at the application layer, or is it always kind of a tension with these open protocols?
I mean, that's basically what we're seeing on Ethereum, right? Private mempools and interacting with private mempools, and that's the way that people are trying to solve MEV. I don't think it matters what your application does if you're still posting transactions to a public ledger that is Bitcoin. Like, how are you preventing MEV? I know Casey has this commit reveal scheme with runes in an attempt to prevent MEV on rune stickers. But even that, I'm still not all the way there on like being able to prevent it in a good way.
It's, you know, I'm going to talk about this later today too, but like, sometimes you feel like we're just speed running the same lessons we learned on ETH. And sometimes I wonder if if all of the responses to MEV mitigation on ETH have actually yielded any answers. I know you wanted to talk about like the Dan Kuhn upgrade, Bob, which happened last week, which is an ETH thing, and I'm not super familiar with it, but like that the Dan Kuhn upgrade is in response to data blobs and trying to price those correctly, among other things. And again, it does come down to a number of things, but including pricing of assets. So, yeah, I wonder if we've just learned what doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that Bob suggested was private mempools, which do solve it at some level, but you then get, you lose the centralization at some level, right? Like, you cannot be sniped if you go to Mara, if you went from Magic Eden to Mara's Slipstream into my wallet. That would be unsnipable.
I think this is a no-brainer product that I think pools should offer to someone like Magic Eden, which is Snipe is MEV resistance or snipe resistance settlement. You'll have to wait maybe a 24-hour period, and you know, for whatever kind of block space deliverable deal might exist. But like, yeah, you can pay a small fee to guarantee that this transaction won't get sniped. And I think it's a real product that can be offered. It does incentivize private mempools. And this is different than private mempools to get non-standard transactions, which is the majority of what Slipstream's currently been doing. This would be private mempools kind of like preventing your business's windows from being broken. You know, pay the fee and be safe from all that chaos. So
that's,
this is a no-brainer product offer.
Yeah, that's product number two, alpha for the pod today. Just going on to Magic Eden, hitting buy, hitting yes, I want to pay more for a private non-public mempool. And certain like really big miners could probably offer a couple hour guarantee. They're going to hit enough blocks depending on demand. You know, it could get longer. But as long as they're hitting blocks, you start to, well, one, that's going to be really annoying for like public people trying to get transactions through, because you're going to have an entire block and you thought your transaction was going to make it, and then it gets sniped. Your block gets sniped in this sense, where now the whole block is being mined by some other miner and they're not mining transactions actually in the mempool. So like throws into whack a whole bunch of things.
Isn't that self-leveling though? Because if people's things start getting pushed into the following block, they're going to start being so incentivized that mining companies are going to have to take those blocks, or at least incorporate those transactions into those blocks, right? Like this is what we love about Bitcoin, is that it's financially incentivized to be correct, not choosing what they think is should be happening. Because like, are you going to turn down all that money? Usually not, right?
You'd be surprised.
Depends on how much money is coming on the other side, right?
Yeah. One thing that's interesting is that this also comes into play for pool payout models. So if you look at how mining pools pay out per unit of hash rate, there's a few payout schemes. And the dominant one, which is FPPS, full pay for share, basically looks at the like what the estimated unit of hash rate should be paid if it's pointed to your pool. In layman's terms, it's the way you as a miner probably think you're getting paid, but and it's the preferred way because it's a more stable form of payment. But what's interesting is FPPS is paid out based upon an estimate and comparison versus the network. But if you are pricing your blocks differently and accommodating for payments in different ways, either inside or outside of your blocks, you begin to throw off the FPPS estimates of your mining pools. And I think, and I actually coined this term, which is it's you pay out hash price plus, which is hash price plus additional value acquired from block construction. I think it's a really interesting idea and proposal for a new type of payment scheme. And I did kind of just derail into the implications of these like mempool, dark mempool policy or dark mempool like products. But I think it has, it just makes a lot of sense to me that we would see that insofar as like mempool relay policy for Bitcoin Core is fairly restrictive, plus you have this incentive for marketplace mempool sniping protection. So it's a very, very interesting year for mining and block construction.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the end game for a lot of this is like, I don't know a ton about Flashbots, but they do some kind of like private mempool plus bundles, and they auction that off. That seems like the end game. Like, you're going to have the public mempool, and then you're going to have some kind of two or three services that bundle things up, and they'll partner with Xverse, and they'll use their RPC, and they'll send to the thing. And
yep,
I think that it has to go that way. And then you'll just have to figure out fee estimation as you go, as best you can, with disjointed mempools, right?
It's pretty fun.
Yeah, but now you get into proposer-builder separation. Like, separating the actual proposer of the block to the people who construct the block. Are you selling, is Flashbot selling bundles of transactions, or are they selling whole block templates? I don't know. I don't know which way is going to... Will we actually even see that on Bitcoin? We've seen that create new problems on ETH, such as transaction inclusion. And that's kind of what I was getting to at the beginning, is like, have we actually solved anything? I don't know. As weird as it is, maybe the answer is the majority of the higher frequency exchanges, perhaps those happen off chain. And for the really important stuff, and this is kind of intuitively we know about Bitcoin, the really important stuff long term stays on chain because we'll have a lot more incentive to price that correctly. So I'm just kind of talking through my working thought process here.
This is a safe space.
Yeah, I mean, the more I learn about Mercury Layer, it seems like a pretty good solution for a lot of this, because its UX is pretty easy. You just spin up a Taproot address and you send assets to it. It becomes like this kind of like mummified asset. Whatever's in that state coin is can be floated around. A marketplace like that sounds like the way to go, although you're trusting Mercury Layer in this case. They're like blinded server.
The hard part is also you have to bridge your assets. So like it takes a Bitcoin transaction in order to commit assets or funds into the state chain. And yep. So there is always this layer where, do you want to list natively on Magic Eden for free where all the liquidity is, or do you want to pay in order to move? Like let's look at ordinals in this case. Pay to move your ordinals over into, I mean, ideally you would want a separate address for every ordinal in order for the trading to work best. And so you could do like a send mini of sorts, but that's still paying to move to another place in order to transact, when you could just list on Magic Eden where all the liquidity is. Like it's so hard. Yeah.
No,
it's
that's
so
true,
hard because that scenario to play out.
I remember early on in Ordinals, there's a collection called Megapunks that locked their like key to the Ordinal in an Emblem Vault, and so I had to go to ETH to fucking buy some ETH to like pay high gas fees, and then it was so expensive to like reveal the keys and move it into a terrible UX. So I take that back. There's actually a pretty big hurdle to Mercury Layer if it's like moderate.
Yes, except for Merlin. Merlin is a good example of someone who has hyped up and provided incentives and incentive structure for people to lock up their assets. So there are like hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands, thousands and thousands of ordinals locked in Merlin because there's an incentive for users to go there and lock them up.
So this is all with the idea, or rather still everything we're talking about is about how do we stop people from sniping things from other people? Is that kind of the point of this, right? How to
just trade
transaction
it.
Just, is person to person.
Just trade it off chain.
I'd like to propose another public good that I think this provides, this whole like being able to price things back to where they actually are valued in the market. Let's say you find $100 bill on the ground and everyone can bid on that $100 bill to take it from you all the way back up to $100, it almost disincentivizes even finding the $100 bill. If the end user is still going to pay $100 for it, or $99 in this case, it kind of is like a public goods system to say that, yeah, we know this one person lost a bunch of money by fat fingering and throwing this down below whatever the market values it at, but no one gained anything from it because the buyer still paid market value for it. That's kind of a public good. It disincentivizes really? Us rooting for people to do that to begin with, because no one wins when it happens.
Some might call that the market being very efficient, is that no one wins and That means the market is very efficient at distributing value.
Go Bitcoin.
So that nobody wins in certain... Nobody has undue advantage. And I don't know. This is a fascinating conversation.
Except for miners. Miners could win if they wanted to win. Unilaterally.
Well, they're providing security. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Miners could win everything.
Some would say miners winning is the network discovering a healthy fee market. So, which is, I'm talking my bags here. This is an urgent thing, at least on a decade-long timeline. A decade from now, we need to have figured out what Bitcoin's fee market at least looks like.
Yeah, I think my argument was it's less of a public good if miners lived as the kings of this public good.
Well, I mean, it happens. How often does it happen, right? Let's say it happens once a day, once a minute, once an hour. It's still, all it is providing, instead of someone making the buyer sniping something that was unfair, the person who thinks it's worth whatever it's worth pays that. And then the people securing the castle get the money for that. I mean, who else should get it, right?
Well, what
miners
what
can't
I'm saying
poorly in that situation, can they?
Oh, you're right. Even if the miner took the transaction itself, you have a user willing to pay up to almost market price,
right?
And so you're not actually gaining that much as a miner.
There's not really a backdoor for that. I don't see.
As users become more efficient at MEV, all the money just goes to miners. Miners don't have to do it. I always come back to that point. I always forget.
So still feels like a public good to me. It still feels like ESPTs as a marketplace solution are not a bad idea. They just disincentivize not knowing what you're doing on the network, which again, I think Bitcoin has been a really good example. Ordinals have been a really good example of the people willing to take the time to understand the network on which they're operating, winning every time since the get-go.
We should jump into extreme cases of MEV at the block production level. So with the halving coming up, there are rumors that we might have multiple people trying to mine. Everyone's going to try to mine the first runes block, for example. And if you get one, you might just build from your own chain rather than another chain. So we might have a 2-3-4 block reorg when the halving hits. This is almost like MEV at the miner level.
It's fun.
I mean, I would be worried if we didn't see a reorg, because that would, to me, signify collusion at a scale which I think is untenable for Bitcoin decentralization. So to me, having a teeny tiny little reorg would be the ideal scenario.
Yeah, what if it's a 4-block reorg?
Well, I was saying it's 4-block gets close to 5, and 5 is close to Coinbase's 6, 6 blocks of finality. Mm.
But it gets more and more difficult to do that, right?
Coinbase doesn't even do 6 anymore. I'm pretty sure it's 3 or 2.
Don't the odds of successfully reorganizing, reorg or whatever, that's short for reorganize, right? What that is.
Yep.
Don't the odds of successfully pulling this off get logarithmically or at least binarily more difficult the further down you go? So it's 2 to the 2, 2 to the 3, 2 to the 4, 2 to the 5. A 6-block reorg is insanely difficult to pull off, right?
Unless you're trying to, because there are high fees. Put $1 million in that one block, and it's worth it to go for the 6-block reorg now. And so it's not even probability based. It's just, do you want $1 million? And if you want $1 million, then you just go for it.
But it's still really isn't there some degree of probability involved in that? You can't just decide to do a 6-block reorg. There still has to be the right things have to happen. And those right things are more and more difficult as time goes on, block by block, right?
Imagine this crazy scenario where you have all the big miners all going for the block. And then the only people left, it's basically an equivalent amount of hash rate. So let's say we have 20, 20, 20, 20, four big miners going at it, and then the rest, which is 20. At that point, it's just equal likelihood. Anybody could win at any point in time because you have 20% of the hash rate going from your own block. So we could have, you could go for 10 blocks as this 20% corner, and you might lose initially and be a block or two behind, but you might catch up and eventually get the 10th block. I don't know. It's crazy to think about.
And then if that happens, if we end up on a 10-block reorg, that's just a separate chain that we can then not say is Bitcoin. Right? I mean, isn't that what a fork is? It's the same thing.
But then you might call that a, I believe, you might call that a feather fork, I believe. I forget. Oh,
that's soft.
I'm having to dig deep in my life.
Extremely.
So that's
Bitcoin
soft.
Fork knowledge. Yeah.
Wait, so I don't know enough about like how chain reorgs and coming back to consensus work. So like in that 2020 example, and it's like, I want the Epic Sat, so I'm just going to go balls to the walls and just mine in my direction. What the thing that causes the people to come back to reality, if you will, is that they just determine they've lost and they start mining the longest chain tip. Like what happens, what makes the miner go, oh, I lost, what happens there? And they go back to reality.
So we don't really know. A magician never reveals their secrets. So we don't actually know for sure the logic that pools use to do this. I would imagine it follows something which you find kind of intuitive. You have a risk tolerance and basically kind of a spend budget, which is like we're willing to spend 3 blocks worth of risk. Perhaps we toggle this decision scenario off and on, depending on when we want to do it. And you just say we'll extend ourselves up to 3 blocks, and then we'll yank the plug and go back to mining off chain tip. And so, but you know what's weird is historically we've not had this. What is very different this time is not. I don't think pools. My candid opinion is I don't think pools really have had a lot of time to actually build like sophisticated reorg logic.
True.
However, we've never had such a telegraphable block or series of blocks. This is what is different, is that we have 30 days. Honestly, if you've been paying attention, we've had like 90 days since this has been clearly telegraphed as an opportunity for reorg. So I would imagine that right now, as we speak, the sharpest engineers at the largest, most forward-thinking companies are figuring out how they can have some kind of halving strategy. And I think this is the kind of tooling and logic that you can implement many times going forwards. Because, like, imagine, I don't know if you've looked at how the runes are etched or minted or whatever, but runes actually have an interesting mechanic where you can define a certain number of blocks for a rune mint. So now you can reuse this type of logic to basically turn on this decision scenario. Or if a rune, which is really big, is heating up and you have X number of blocks for it to be minted out, then you can basically flip that logic back on and start like trying to consider reorg scenarios. This is a really interesting, like, the incentives are outpacing my ability to understand the effects of the incentives.
So is that
the largest...
Sorry, go ahead, Bob.
No, I was just going to say, what's the largest fee?
Largest fee was absolute Bitcoin or U.S. dollar terms?
U.S. dollar.
That was the year.
Not the 3.1 million fat finger fee. I want to know actual like demand. Real. Yeah.
There was a 7 Bitcoin fee block, right? And at that point, Bitcoin was like 35 or so. So we're probably 2 to 250K would be my, just off the top of my head, guess in fees alone.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, you can figure this out on blockchair.com. They're probably the best site for this type of discovery. I did it once. I was looking through, but it's hard for me because some of it's like ancient Bitcoin history, like 2017 or 2013 when... You know, it was a super high Bitcoin denominated fee, but it was also a bunch of empty blocks because of the block size war and ant bleed and other things like that.
Yep.
Yep, makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the value is going to be for this block, because if it's $1 million, we can actually look at what the block reward is and try to estimate the risk tolerance of miners. So, like, let's assume it's $1 million. Let's assume Bitcoin at its current price. The block reward is going to be what? 3.125? 3.125? So take 3.125 and multiply it by your whatever 70,000, and you get about, I don't know, 200 and something thousand. So that would be maybe five blocks to get up to $1 million. And so maybe you would be willing to risk a couple blocks in order to grab that $1 million block. And if it's more, it's $2 million, then you're willing to wait twice as long, especially because the block after is likely going to be another high value block. Oh, that's actually an
This is
interesting
going to get
point
pushed
that I
down the road.
I'd be surprised if block 840,000 was the highest fee block. I wouldn't be surprised if it were one of the handful following it. Because what happens is, and you this actually gets into specifically the commit reveal scheme of the runes themselves. It is
Yep.
equally interesting where you can set the reveal for X number of blocks out. I believe the default is six. So we will know in the hour preceding the halving. Like we'll start to, I anticipate we'll start to see fees ramp up like fucking crazy, dude. Because everybody will be like issuing their commits, their rune token, their rune, ticker commits, and that like 20, 30 minutes prior to the halving block, I would imagine it gets really, really wonky. But in such a case that like, I can't help but think this probably breaks a lot of the block template construction from a lot of the pools. Like it's gonna, I don't think these things are built to like really handle insanely variable like skyrocketing intra-block fees quite at the level that other block builders on like Ethereum are. So
Anybody who can't get their transaction into, let's say, five blocks before the halving block is going to get pushed into the following blocks, which is going to push into the halving block. And anybody trying to get into the halving block is going to push everybody else further down the road. But like only the top 2 megabytes or whatever are going to make it into that halving block. There's probably going to be 50 to 200 blocks of like astronomical fees after that, because everyone who's ever used Bitcoin is going to try to do something. Not to mention anyone who has to consolidate UTXOs and picked a really bad time to do it is going to have to pay outlandish, hilarious fees, clown fees. It's going to push transactions even further down the road. So I think even just off of the halving traffic jam, the tail of the dragon from the brake lights that happens on that one day, miners, we could just not see another transaction for 6 months and the miners will be fed. It feels like this is kind of like, this is maybe the beginning of
remember
the security budget.
our revenue gets cut in half too. Our base revenue gets cut in half.
Technically, which is
So
funny because the price of Bitcoin is more than 2 times what it was this time last year.
let me tell you,
And
man, like
it's
the
pretty cool.
previous halvings, I was mining the last halving and that shit was brutal. So
Wasn't like this.
machine pricing cratered because like nothing was profitable. Even though it was pretty clear we were back in a bull market, like it, it still, we had another like a major minor flush out right after the halving in 2020. That summer was pretty brutal again. So, I for one am welcoming, for the first time ever, like miners not capitulating after the halving. So, but we'll see. We could see.
I'm kind of convincing myself against the reorg risk now, because why mine the halving block if you can mine the block after the halving?
And five
Just
before
mine the
and 20
next
after.
block and it'll still be a really high fee block. So yeah, you missed the halving block, but just go for the next one. And if you miss it, just go for the next one. Like, why risk getting the next block in order to try to get multiple blocks? Like, I don't know, that's a really risky strategy. For even for a mining pool with a significant amount of hash rate.
There's going to be a distribution of fees. There'll be a lot of blocks that are expensive.
We just talked
Yeah,
for 40 minutes gaming out.
we're super nerds.
It's not, I'm not bored.
I am so excited. Like, it's making me think back to like when the 2016 election, when it was like Hillary and Trump. And we're all like on that little election page, like, who is he really winning? No fucking way he's winning. This is crazy. And now it's gonna be on like mempool.space and like bitfeed.live and just like refreshing until it crashes. I'm like, oh my God, it's getting bigger. It's getting bigger. This is insane.
Be RBFing my rune commit ticker transaction. No, I can't
Yeah.
believe it. I'm paying $500. No.
Yep.
Which brings us to our
Yeah.
next topic.
Wait, before we leave it, can we do a quick prediction? Will we see a reorg? How many blocks? That's the that
There's
is
some glory.
the question. I'm
I'm
gonna
gonna take the
guess.
I'm gonna t I'm gonna take the under. I'm gonna say three or less. I'll say it's gonna be two.
Two
This is
block
looking for
reorg.
Two
two
is a
block
safe
reorg.
bet. Two or three.
I have no podium from which to say this. I have no idea.
I'm gonna say no reorg.
No reorg.
Zero.
I'm leaning towards that now, but
How boring.
2 days ago I thought something very different, so who knows? Maybe in another 2 days I'll have a different opinion.
Charlie?
Yeah.
I would like to see a two block reorg. I'll put it that way.
You think that it will be indicated an indication that the game is being played fairly if someone achieves one two block reorg? Because six is bad and none is maybe worse.
I fear Bob's scenario. That's all I'll
Because of
say.
collusion.
That would imply that, yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily imply that. It could also mean you believe that this is valuable block A, and this is valuable block B, and this is valuable block C, and we want to get one of them. And if we don't get A, do we? Well, okay, I get your point.
But if the fee rate is stretched, let's say the fee rate is the same, the median fee is 1,000 for 25 blocks. Why reorg? For the epic sat, no one has proven to really give a shit.
No,
Shoot.
Epic Sat is I'll buy the Epic Sat for a high price if I ever get the option. But I don't think
The
that's worked into put into pool logic right now.
that's what I mean. So if the fees are
reason. Sorry, the reason you reorg is because you want valuable block A and valuable block B and valuable block
You
C.
want all
And
forty.
if you can get A, B, C, D, and E, and because you now have the longest chain, now you win everything, then that's hugely valuable.
But isn't the
So
fee structure, or the fees are going to be so spread out that, like, because, like, yeah, you're going to get everything that's above, let's say, 1500, that's per VBET or whatever, is going to make it into the halving block. But then there's going to be like 20 to 50 to 100 blocks of north of 1,000 sats per VBET that didn't make it into that block. So why would you fight so dramatically and risk so much to get that one thing when everything after it is so juicy too? That is another question, right?
It's a good question. Okay, let's pause it there. Because yeah, as Tara said, we just riffed and completely nerded out for 40
You
minutes.
gotta
So
move
let's
on.
let the mining nerds, you can go back into the other room. The degens, you can now enter the chat. So yeah, let's riff for the last 10 minutes or so on two things I only know the names of. I have not touched them. I don't know anything about them. Gob, or Game of Blocks, and Gamestone. I don't know who wants to take this. This is some DJ and enjoyer stuff. What is going on here?
Anybody?
Donnie, you're like my
Who's
degen whisperer.
Am I the degen? But you're the one who was like mapping out the game plan, right? For
Well, so basically,
for
I get
Gob.
free on Sunday afternoons. I get like to string together consecutive thoughts. So that's
Oh,
usually
yeah,
when
I
I have
see.
my when I like, okay, I'll dive into this. So
Gob is
game of
using Game of Blocks.
Yeah, it's so a bunch of airdrops, right? Not clearly communicated as a runes farming drop, but that's pretty much what we can assume. There's strong indication. And you get these blocks, and there is a schedule. Every 144 blocks, your gob inscription will double the number of blocks it has on it, unless you reinscribe it to basically freeze it. But when you reinscribe it, there's a chance you'll die. The schedule for
High
probabilities
chance.
is it's published, and it's really, really almost certain you'll die in the first one or two cycles. And then there is an associated MIME, mine yield, published with the schedule. Strongly implied is that the mine yield will map onto a runes allocation in the future. So then the question is, what is the optimal strategy to play
There's
this
a
game
second
to
part.
maximize your rhyme?
There's
Yeah,
a second part to the
there's
game
yeah,
too.
you take the
As
second
you
part.
go down, if you do nothing at all and you let the, what is called the Genesis tier degrade into a tier one to a tier two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight down to the bottom, where there are then I think 256 of these little guys on there, and it's like its yield or value is significantly lower, you can now combine them back into a tier 7, and then combine 2 into a tier 6 and 2 6s into a 5, and you can crawl your way back up. So Charlie, when you were making a map of like, or showing me that you were thinking about making a map, I didn't see the map, I don't know what he's thinking, about how to do this, the one thing missing is what they'll be priced at when they're all the way down at the bottom. If it will be more monetarily wise to collect a whole bunch at the bottom, of which you would need 256 to combine back up to tier 1, or do you just risk them all at the top, or do you take mitigate risk and risk 2 at every level and then see if you can build them back up? It's a fun game, and it's using the inscription endpoint, correct?
Yep. The stat endpoint, yeah. I hope whoever's behind it has some Bitcoin, because they're going to be having to airdrop a lot, I anticipate. Because the way they'll like issue the new inscriptions occasionally will be to reinscribe. I think it's really fascinating because I proposed a very, very simple, we're going to hand wave away all the other factors, the future phases, the future, merging, and then secondary market pricing, and just come up with a very simple boilerplate, decision matrix for if you have one gob. That's pretty easy to localize, pretty easy to package and say, here is if you want to take a conservative, like risk reward maximizing decision. Now we have, you could like play the game, and you could like not be playing the game, and you could just look at the pricing of gobs on secondary and actually identify mispricing among them based upon relative price level. So that you have so many different little knobs you can tweak for this game, because you've got like almost, you've got two different unrelated markets, and on one of them you have two or three different like risk probabilities. So, or statistic schedules, whatever the right word is. Bob, I'm curious your thoughts. You have a mind to think through this faster than me.
Yeah, God is really fun because it's a game of probability. I think there might be a phase 3 to the game that we don't know anything about. So there might be some incentive. Maybe they say those who participated in every phase get more rewards in some fashion. Like, I don't know. Like, there are new things that they could add. But what I wanted to know was, from a pure probability perspective, so not taking into account marketplace pricing at all, what's the best strategy from a probability perspective? And the solution that I came up with was, you can use this binomial probability model essentially to calculate what's the likelihood, if I have 100 gobs and I risk them all in phase 1, what's the likelihood I get 0? What's the likelihood I get 1? What's the likelihood I get 2? What's the likelihood I get 3? And if you add them all up, then you get that. I mean, you get 100% probability, but then you can see what are my chances of success versus what are my chances of failure. And so based on, and then you have to add in the phase 2, where you can actually take 2 of 8 to make a 7, 2 of 7 to make a 6, 2 of 6 to make a 5. And that actually doesn't give you that much. It's going from, I only did this a few rounds down, but it only gives you like a 4% bump, making 2 2s into a 1, because the 2s are mining themselves. Supposedly, you get a mime allocation for each of your 2s that's just slightly less than the allocation for what a 1 is. And so it's like a 4% bump up in the event that you do merge up. But it drops off enough initially that I think the best strategy is pool all of your gobs together with a whole bunch of other people. Once you get to a certain threshold, like 50, 60, 70, 80, 100, it just makes sense. The more gobs you throw in the pool, the better for everyone. You have it dramatically increases. This is the same reason we have mining pools, actually. You want to increase the likelihood that you will hit. And so you go into a pool, everyone goes in a pool, and then there's a chance that you could, like, with 100, there's like a 1% chance you get 7 or 6 or something like that. And that would be like a huge win for the pool. But there's also at 100, there's like a, what's the chance of failure? Like 30% or 20% or something. So the other fun comparison to make is the 256 case scenario. 256 guarantees you a Genesis On the other hand, if you have 256 and you risk them all initially, then you have a 7% chance of zero. And then all the other conditions are very, very good. It's like 20% for one, 20% for two, 20% for three, 10% for four, 5% for five, 1% for six, et cetera. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a fun probability game. I'm definitely the probability nerd. So.
Got me beat. It's crazy that, just to remind ourselves, 72 hours ago, we had a couple people asking, what are these random things in my wallet? And now we have, like, risk-reward, game theory, matrix, decision matrix scenarios published, and this is wild. This type of thing didn't happen on Bitcoin before. It used to be someone had some goofy meme that they then just harassed non-Bitcoiners with, and now we get to actually leverage the mind power of the degen class.
And Luminex and Satting added new chunks or features to their websites in order to accommodate this, and people who didn't know what reinscription was at all still may not fundamentally understand it, but have undergone it and are watching the effects in their wallet. This is good exposure therapy.
I continue to be pretty humbled by the reality that what seems like frivolous degenerate behavior so often drives forward things that I didn't think would be adopted. This is kind of me personally as a Bitcoiner growing up and saying, like, well, I don't want to endorse this type of like speculation, but I really do see it as an important and powerful tool. And I probably wouldn't have said that 3 years ago.
This is a video.
I see it as I see these things as incredible tools, to drive forward. In this case, it'd just be ord client feature set adoption. But, you know, this applies also to Bitcoin. Look at pay to Taproot.
Taproot. Yep. 12 blocks, by the way. 12 blocks until reveal. I know this is coming out later, but 14. Yeah. 14 blocks. 14 blocks.
Oh, until we find out if we lost our gobs? Yep. Guess what I did? I risked them all.
What did you do?
YOLO.
I threw them off.
Full send.
Half court. Let's see what happens. Full court, really.
We also need to account for the fact that, like, degens have absolutely no ability to be patient, so they're always going to bias towards the most ridiculous, like, risk-on scenario.
Yeah.
So take that subjective, you know, objective evaluation to account, and I almost kind of wish it was a relative game. So initially I thought it was, like, your goal is to just beat other people, because then I think it'd be really even more fun to play, because it becomes very much a watching the market or even indexing these things yourself type scheme. So, yeah.
It seems to me that if we are, you know, when you play video games when you're a kid and you're like trying to get the high score, and then because you tried to get the high score, you explore some part of the game that like no one would have seen unless they were trying to get the high score. I don't see why life is any different than this. We try to treat it like it's this serious thing where like it's prescribed and you're supposed to go to school and you're supposed to get a job and you're supposed to retire and you're supposed to have kids. You didn't do it the right way unless you follow that prescription. But not following that prescription yields the most fun results, the results that people write about in history books and the ones that we all celebrate all day, every day. We don't celebrate like the boring, mundane, prescribed items. We celebrate everything that's not that. So tell me how this is different from a video game, and then tell me why we shouldn't shitcoin. I also had your point of view for the last however long I've been alive, where like, what do they call that? Left curving it? I'm still learning what these things mean. But when you like overthink something and you're like, is it logically sound? Does it make sense? Does it apply to the rules of the game, or does it follow the rules or whatever? Who cares? And that's right curving it, right? Left curving is when you're just like, cool, right? Do it. That's what I'm doing here, because like, I genuinely think that that's how you find new things now. And I think that's like the whole point. That's how Bitcoin grows. It's how people grow. It's how any ecosystem finds its legs and figures out why it's here, you know? So it's a video game.
Beautifully
said. Poetic, Donnie.
That's a good note to end it on, because, like, honestly, I understood, like, half of it halfway through your talk, Donnie, and then by the end of your talk, I understood, like, 10% of it, and now I'm totally lost. Like,
what, game of blocks?
No idea.
Risk them all. You have a few blocks. How many do you
have? I'm going to get some. You got to learn by doing, so I'm just going to go full left curb degen and send some shit.
There is a Luminex reinscription site that if you don't want to.
Yes, definitely use Luminex. Definitely use Luminex.
And it's on the Game of Blocks Twitter. It's like linked from their direct Twitter, which is GOB_BTC. just in case you want to click and just be done.
No, this is good. This has turned into like the Gob Alpha show. So I'm just gonna clip out this last.
Hey, we've spent an hour talking. We spent an hour talking about blocks.
True,
we did. We fucking did. I think that's a good place to call it, gents. This has been a good one.
Appreciate
Wait,
y'all.
Let me get this.
It's not doing right. This anymore, is it?
The okay one? Can you do just this one? Yeah, get that one.
Oh, if you do two, you get go. The fireworks. If you do one, yeah, you get okay, yeah. I get it. All right. Is that Apple products? Is that what's doing that?